You are listening to Super Yacht Radio.
Welcome to Super Yacht Radio. And to keep us feeling good in this new year, we are catching up with the crew winners, the A crew winners from last November. And I have the pleasure today of being joined by a Captain Crew Award winner, Nathan McFadden.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
I have to say, it was a long year last year, but first, if we can kind of go to the crew awards, you had been nominated with a number of others. Did you, I mean, what was the lead up to it and the actual night as it was? Were you still in Barcelona? Did you get to go to the event or were you doing it virtually like most of us?
Yeah, as you said, yeah, it dragged on or went on for a long period of time this year. You know, I've heard about the awards before, never really took much thought, and you know, just going about your normal day in the yachts, and then I found out I was nominated by my crew. Yeah, then I started taking it quite serious after that. It was quite a buzz for me. You know what I mean? Just that recognition, and especially after so many years, and I'm lucky I've had the same crew for so many years. So it really was deep down it was like a real G up in a tough year. And I guess leading on through the year, I didn't think I was going to make the awards in Barcelona just with the way the year was flowing. But then it got extended, a bit later, and I was on my rotational swing at the time. And I ended up staying another 2 or 3 weeks to make sure I could get to, the live event in Barcelona. I wanted to experience that and I wanted to support, the whole A Crew Awards thing. Unfortunately, we didn't get the big party.
And the big dinner and the whole event.
I feel like I've lost a little bit of it. I hear how amazing these events are, and April, I've got it in my head trying to do this party in Barcelona again. But it was still a great night, and we all dressed up, and we social distanced, and we did our thing. And by the time I got on that stage, I was done. I was shocked. I had lots of things in my head to say, but it was amazing, and we went home back to the ship. We had to be home by 10 o'clock, so we had to go straight back to the boat. But we sat there most of the night and had a few drinks and, mucked around as a crew, which I guess that's the whole point of it, the crew voted for me and that's what we did. We had fun together.
Well, I think that kind of universally, having talked to a number of winners now, has been the kind of feeling of just that recognition by your peers. You work your way up the ladder and, you get the achievements of the next big job or whatever. But I think the recognition by your peers of the job you're doing and the fact that they want you to have that recognition is the sort of special thing about the crew awards.
Yeah, I think you're right. The recognition and I know sometimes maybe some people go in every year after year after year. And I kind of thought, we do it once, we do it right. We gave it our best shot. And I'm happy. The crew are like, well, let's do it again next year. It's like, no, I think, it's just great to have had the chance and let's continue on. But it was an amazing experience and a big reward for my crew as well,
Yeah, indeed. Well, and particularly the year that was in it, I think that really shows as a team how you kind of stuck together. Because it wasn't the easiest year to navigate as a team.
No, we did. Right. We didn't know what was coming, when the next trips would be. Would be people getting laid off? Would there be, there was so many, ups and downs with that year, a bit of a roller coaster. And during that whole time, we're still doing those initial voting. That category that we're in, that 3,000-ton master, ended up being a big category. I looked at some of the other ones and I was thinking, 5, 6 people, and then onto ours was like 19, and all of the people equally as good as each other. I knew at least 3 or 4 people in that category, and then you're going up mate against mate, and then you're, your friends are voting, and then, it was crazy. And I kind of thought to myself, if we can get through to the finalists, we've got a shot, because, so many people are doing social media nowadays, and I started worrying because we're still quite highly confidential boat, and so we can't have that media side. I was a bit nervous trying to get to the final three, and I thought once I got there, everyone's got a good shot from there.
Well, congratulations. One of my favorite questions particularly with captains. And I almost find there's a generational answer to this. So I'd be interested to see what
generation am I in?
Well, exactly. But is where did it start on the whole journey into yachting way back when, which isn't actually as way back as it is for others, but when you started, how did you get into it?
I did uni straight out, you know, did my schooling, then went and did university and did business and tourism and stuff like that. And I started actually originally doing a hotel apprenticeship, you know, working through to be a hotel manager. About a year or so into that, I got pulled aside by a person, you know, kind of a marketing person who was running a big jet boat company in New Zealand. And this is where they take tourists through canyons and we whiz them and we scare them. And that's, yeah, I thought, okay, I'll go and have a look. So I ended up doing this tourism boating job. And I did that for 5 years out of university. And, you know, it's if you've ever been to New Zealand, it's one of the premium attractions, you know. I think we'd taken over 4 or 5 million people on these boats. So I was the captain of these boats and we did a lot of, you know, PR stuff. And then happened to be one day, one of these super yacht owners' reps was on the boat with me and he said, you must come and work, you know, for us. And I didn't know anything about it. You know, I'm in a landlocked town in New Zealand, you know, racing tourists up and down a river. And then I hear about this yachting thing and I'd never heard about it. So I researched and I said, look, you know, things like this come up when you're on your day-to-day trip. And I said, you know, send a contract because, you know, we don't know anything's real, you know. And yeah, sure enough, contract came along and they're going to do this for me, fly me here, do this. And I was like, well, this is it, you know. So and that's where I ended up, overseas. A young guy, middle of New Zealand on his jet boat and then all of a sudden in Germany on a massive yacht.
But on the, I mean, I would just think it's kind of intimidating to go from, you know, from the boat you were driving to a super yacht. Were there couple hoops you had to jump through in order to?
Well, yeah, you had to do those courses. I think because they had New Zealand jet boats on this boat, I think was a bit of a draw card, you know, and I'd been boating for 5 years. And I think it was I didn't know what I was getting myself into more. I'd probably say I was naive. You know, I went there. They've got yachting has a high standard. So I probably went in there a bit gung-ho originally. But, you know, I quickly got woken up, you know, and maybe when I was in my job in New Zealand, I was probably more senior going to a bottom deckhand on a massive boat. But, you know, we had good guys around us, you know, a lot of commercial guys on this boat I'm talking about, you know, and the guidance was good and, you know, pretty quickly realized because I wasn't, you know, I didn't start at like 19, you know, I was 26. So I realized pretty quickly I could see the route that I needed to go to get ahead. So so my next step after that, I've only actually had two boats and then my owner currently. I've been with my owner for 12 years now and we've had three on top of that, but I kind of count that as one. But so my next boat was a round the world boat where we never went anywhere more than twice. You know, we did world trips. We did, you know, 37 weeks with guests on and, you know, we really got the numbers going with that. So I was very lucky over 3 years of doing that. So, yeah.
You got to see the world.
Amazing experience. Yeah, we got to see the world and you know, everything I learned along the way, the good, the bad, and I think that's what I brought into my captaincy. I said, you know, a lot of things in yachting, it's like, well, who come up with that? You know, where did this come from? You know, and then I wanted to look into this. You know, certain things that we do, you know, I like the history and the background of it and we continue that today. But the things I didn't like and the things that were kind of what captain made this up or who come up with these ideas or you know, some of these things that maybe have hurt people or you know, just were not the fun parts of yachting, I've tried to change on my ship and bring that along, you know. And, you know, I've got guys of 7 years, 9 years, 5 years, you know, lots of longevity on my boat. And a lot of guys have also come with us and moved on because of, you know, people need to grow. So we've trained a lot of great people as well that are doing great things. So very interesting path.
Yeah. And for you, were there a few mentors along the way of people that helped you take that step up? I mean, it sounds a little bit like some of it was also an apprenticeship of kind of learning on your feet and,
yep.
you know, the old adage of learn by example. If you had a couple good examples along the way.
You know, their busy boat really pushed us into the deep end, you know, doing those world trips, being in a different country every day, trying to do study courses, trying to get away, just being organized for that kind of thing. And then, you know, there was guys that gave me chances ahead of my time. You know what I mean? People that see something in you and go, you know, maybe they wouldn't teach you enough because, you know, you've got enough going on every day running a boat without needing to be taught everything. So taking the bits you can from people, taking the best things, you know, there's a thousand ways to do every job. One person will do it one way or another. What finds out what works for you, what works for the boat. And you know, there was still lots of guys that gave me that chance, right down to my current owner, you know, who sponsored me through my captain's tickets to speed the process to, you know, waiting for me to get that ticket, you know, buying boats as I got the tickets, buying bigger boats, you know. You know, so the owner is a big mentor, you know, he's really helped out. You know, captains before that, you know, when I was inexperienced and I got an early job offer, we took another captain from another boat that we knew onto our boat to be assistant captain to get me through those first couple of years. Because, you know, I was running a boat at about 29 years old, and, you know, 50-meter yacht, you know, and needed that mentoring and help from there. So there's been a lot of a couple of good captains, a good owner, and then just right at the start, you know, a lot of really skilled guys at the start. So, you know, a mixture of everybody to get where I am. It's just one man.
If you're kind of thinking back on it, what would you say for the younger crew that are kind of coming up and they're kind of seeing where you are as sort of the end goal, so to speak, of where they want to be? What would your kind of advice be on some of the challenges or some things that aren't necessarily recognized? It's not just your certification that you need, but some of the bigger responsibilities possibly of being a captain. These are the ones you kind of need to be aware of if you really want to make to be an effective captain.
Look, I think you know, you can get your courses, you can get that thing, that side of stuff. You obviously have to get all that that under your belt. But, you know, I think nowadays, more important, you need that longevity as well. You need to be that people person. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to be on a yacht and I'm going to do this. You know, there's too many people out there still to this day that have no people skills, no management skills. And that is more the job now than ever before. You know, I've worked with some fantastic seamen who haven't moved as far as I have. I've probably got better people skills. They're probably better sailors. But I think I think there's a real turn towards, you know, we're mentoring people every day now. You know, we're having, you know, especially in this day and age and with what we're going through now, mental illness issues. We're having tight confinement problems. You know, you're becoming a, you know, we've got guys now 19, 21 on our boat. You know, we need to look after them. And I think a good, you know, listening ear, you have to be, you know, really available for your guys. And I think we need to be, I think the industry went to a while there. It was just like a number, you know, you turn up, you didn't do the job, out you go. I don't think we can be like that. We need to look after our crew. We need to build these guys up and we need to be aware that the yacht is only one part of it. Everyone's got a life outside of the boat and we really have to take on what everyone's thinking. And especially for young people, you know, if it's a hard boat and you're not getting along, you've got to just keep trying. You know, I don't think job hopping and chopping and changing is the way forward. Not anymore. You know, it's a serious game now.
It's sort of a reflection of what I've heard back when Captain said, you know, it's not just about driving the boat, but there are times that I'm a friend, I'm a brother, I'm a father, I'm a friend, I'm a boss. You know, you got to have all these roles because in some ways this job is like other seafarers, but particularly on a super yacht because you are confined in a much smaller space that you're not just working together, but living together. And you have that cross-cultural differences. Not everyone's first language is even English, which have nuances that we don't realize when it's our first language, that dynamic is possibly the biggest factor that affects your working life. Because when it's working, you know, it's great. When it's not working, it's going to be there all the time.
I would say, you know, like you've said, I think 5% is the boat, and the rest is the people and the financing. And, you know, our boat's a little different because we run pretty much most of the stuff ourselves. But, you know, there's so much more than the actual the captain side of just driving a boat and going from lovely place to lovely place, you know. Mm. And this year's especially pointed that out to us. So, you know, for the young ones coming up, do the courses, do more than you need to do, have the good attitude, you know. You're going to be a people person. You're going to be with people your whole time. You're delivering a service, you know. It's yeah. And then they'll be hopefully successful.
If you were to, not that you're at the end for your career, but if you were to like point out one or two highlights that, you know, because you must have this when you go home. We are presently talking on either sides of the world because I'm here in Ireland and Nathan is down in Australia. And I'm sure you have it with your friends that they're like, wow, you're a captain of a super yacht. And if they would say, you know, what's the best thing about it? Or can you give us a highlight of that magic moment where you went, yes, I love what I'm doing?
Look, I think, you know, for me, it's always been about the travel. You know, even during this lockdown, we're still traveling, we're still moving. You know, Australia, I don't know if you know, but we no Australian can leave the country. We've got full blanket, can't travel. So me flying out, everyone's just like, how are you getting out of the country, you know? And we're still traveling. You know, I was down in Valencia. We've been in Barcelona all this last few months, you know, and still seem to be, you know, and that's living our lives. And that's what we kind of did yachting for, was to travel the world and being on that boat. Well, I think I'm about 160 countries I've traveled. And probably 140 of those is probably because of yachts, you know. Amazing. And that's what I did it for. And I've still got that travel bug. You know, I come back here, and of course it's great to come back to the family, the wife and the kids, and, you know, miss them dearly. But, you know, the wife really jealous about, I still get to travel 7 countries, 8 countries. We did the Baltic last year, the whole thing, you know, and we've got big plans for the next few years. So I guess for me, it's this is that golden moment traveling. And you know, one of my highlights last year, you know, going into Stockholm on the boat, amazing through all the islands there. I met my wife in Japan when I was on a boat, traveling Japan for 2 or 3 months. So that's got to be a highlight. Went to Cuba before they even had cell phones or computers, or the computers they did have were the ones with those massive screens. And just what I've seen and what I've got to experience has been amazing. And people you get to share it with, you know. Yeah. I've worked with my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, worked with my wife, you know, and I've got really close friends on board. So, yeah, it really turns into a family, you know. Some of the owners' grandkids, you know. So it's a close-knit place, you know, and it's only a small industry really at the end of the day.
And for you, because, I mean, you've been based in Europe and your family have been based in Australia, this obviously for everybody has been an exceptional year, but in a normal year, how do you guys kind of juggle the balance of having enough time together? Does she come over to Europe on a normal year, or do you have enough of a rotation that you can get home, or how do you have that balance for?
Yeah, look, pre-COVID, we were doing 10 weeks on, 10 weeks off. And we've kind of just grown with that, you know what I mean? My wife's been ashore probably 6 or 7 years now, and we've got used to that 10 on, 10 off. We got our own rhythms, you know. I go back to the boat, we get fit, she does her thing here, we all, you know, and then we meet again and we do our thing. But COVID really has thrown a spanner in that. So we've had to up our rotations to 3 months on, 3 months off to try and just not be on the plane so much. And not sure if everyone knows this, but Australia's got a 14-day mandatory hotel quarantine on arrival. So everyone coming into the country, which is only allowed 30 people a day into Brisbane, has to go into a fully, you know, lockdown hotel where you stay in a room for 14 days, and they want $3,500 for it. So it's really that side of it.
Commitment to go home.
you know, but my wife and I have spoken about it. I've lost another month this year with quarantine, more than a month. I left Barcelona on the 2nd or 3rd of December, didn't get home to the kids till the 22nd. You know what I mean? So I've lost a lot of days with my family, but we look at each other and we say, you know what, this is only going to be maybe a year of our life, maybe two. If this is the worst thing we have to do, we just get on with it, you know. And I still think we're blessed and we're very lucky. It's gutting losing this 40 days extra with the kids, but, you know, that's our thing at the moment. But I believe I'm optimistic that by end of the, you know, European summer next year, we're going to be heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
But before that, yeah, I used to bring them over. You know, I was a full-time captain for many years. You know, rotation is everyone's hope and dream, but it also comes with different things as well. You know, it's not the be-all, end-all in life. So you can make it work. You know, if I wasn't on rotation, my wife and kids would be living close by, or you know, just make things work for you. But, you know, a lot of land people can't understand how we can spend so much time away from each other. But they do forget, when I talk to my mates here, you know, they have 1 hour with the children at night, maybe a half day on the weekend. I get 24 hours a day every day with them when I'm back. And you know, I don't go out and do anything else. It's all for them, you know.
So yeah.
I get the time back.
Do it.
It's hard, yeah. But you get it.
Well, and then they get a little taste of the world growing up as well, you know.
They know, yeah. They're getting languages. They're getting time zones. They're getting, you know, lots of things. You know, my kids are very young, but they're learning all the time.
And I think, like all of us, you know, when sometimes your time is limited, you really appreciate that time as well, you know.
Exactly.
You don't take it for granted because it's precious when you just have a little period.
Exactly. You know, and we're already, you know, by the time I actually get back to the home, I've already booked my flights back to the boat, you know, because we have to be organized now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've already got the countdown clock going to go back. But, you know, you flick that switch, you get on the plane, you go do your job, and you'll get another family. And that's what I said during COVID. You know, I've got another family of 16 people that I look after every day over there. You know, I make sure that I ring, you know, I was ringing a guy the other night because his grandparents got sick in the UK. So I ring them up, make sure they're okay, you know, and just, yeah, you're always involved. Even though I'm away on the break, you're still contacting your other family. You know, these are guys I live, sleep with, you know, party with, you know, all year round as well. So,
well, I think I said this on air last year, but it was one of my favorite studies. It was the longest study ever done, and it was done in Boston, and they started in the 30s, and they traced something like 200 or 300 men through their lives, blue collar, white collar, every age. And every 10 years, they come back and check on them. And near the end of their lives, they brought in the wives who were like, now you want to know about our husbands. Now you ask us. But all of them, whether they made loads of money or they didn't make very much money, or when asked what they valued most in their lives, they all responded, the relationships we made along the way. Mm. So whether that was, you know, marriage and family or the friends they made along the way, that's what was rich in life. And personally, I think that that has got to have been our biggest lesson of 2020. You know, I caught up with more friends. I don't love Zoom like any of us anymore, but we caught up in a whole nother way that we hadn't, that was important. And even, you know, my family's all around the world. We've been all around the world almost all of my life, but now we have family Zoom meetings every kind of month, and we catch up, the six of us, and we chat.
Yeah.
And that, the value of that connection, I think, has become all the more real if we're to take a silver lining out of 2020.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, like I said, love being here, love every minute of it, like I said, and also looking forward to the future and looking forward to getting back over to the boat and seeing what Europe's doing. And you know, I think that's one thing we can also take from this year is, you know, media, you don't know what's going on really around the rest of the world. So we're lucky that we can see all parts of it, because they come back here and they're really, you know, hard on Europe, and then you go to Europe and then they try and blame us. And, you know, like it's a funny old world we're in at the moment. But, you know,
on the other hand, yeah, quite frankly, with hail here in Ireland and back in Australia, you have not just the sunshine, but the free flow of kids and zero COVID numbers.
Zero
I've got to give the thumbs up to Australia for getting this one sorted exactly. Well.
Yeah. But we still want to get you guys back down here when we can, you know. We're a tourist country. We need the people back.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I have to say we've over the past year talked to loads of wonderful people down in Australia and around the Pacific. And it's definitely on my bucket list of, you know, time. I do have a cousin in Australia. I was going to say I don't have family there, which is always a good excuse to go somewhere, but I do have a cousin.
We were meant to bring the ship down here at the end of this last year. Our plan after the mid-season was to travel the Pacific over 2 years and do down here. And I do know a few boats that are heading this direction now. It's just a little bit harder. You know what I mean? Every country you go to now, you have to do a 14-day kind of mandatory anchor, stand down, testing. Then you can open yourself up.
Even if you've come from Europe, it takes about 2 weeks to get to Australia. Would that be considered your like quarantine time because you wouldn't have had contact with anyone else?
Funny thing, it's just happened here in Cairns. A super yacht's just arrived from the Seychelles. They're at sea for 40 days, and they got COVID on arrival. Someone's got COVID on board. It's a funny thing because it takes. If you get it on a ship, it can be quite complicated because you could have that one person have it for 14 days, not know. Day 10, they could give it to you or me, and then you start the 14-day run. So you can actually have it on board. If you've got it on board, you could potentially have it on board for 6 months unless someone comes down sick. So they're all doing over here, especially Australia. So they quarantine at anchor or at a dock. They test you on arrival, test you 14 days later, testing everybody, and then you're free. They're doing that in Singapore. They're doing that in Thailand. They're doing it in Japan. So it does stop that free flow of, you know, my owner loves to change countries. He loves to tell people, I'm here. I'm here tomorrow. I'm there tomorrow. That at the moment is near on impossible.
Unless you're planning a prolonged break.
You've got to do it for a chunk and you've got to go from there. Yeah. Wonderful. And it's difficult.
Yeah.
We have to be more organized than we ever have been.
Yeah. Although I have to say it still remains on my bucket list of amazing places to go. I'm not sure if I'll have the super yacht, but certainly. Yeah.
A whole bunch of super yachts might arrive in Australia soon enough. Who knows?
Well, you know, the irony is that we got a lovely chat with David Good just over a year ago when, you know, the whole charter law had changed and there was all this excitement for the year ahead and Australia's Cup was coming at the end of the year and a whole new path open. And like everywhere, the path changed direction.
Some things that we worry about, you know, like we want to be down in Australia. We want to bring the boat down. We had plans of that. But we're also well aware, like in Europe, we're kind of a number. They're used to us. We kind of hide away. You rock up in Europe, you know, you rock up in Australia, $200 or $300 million boats. All of a sudden, you're quite a fixed on, you know what I mean? Media, people. It's kind of a different thing. And certainly something we're throwing back and forward is just, you know, in a recession, do we need to push people or make people feel, you know, it's a different kind of culture down here. So we're really aware of the recessions and the people that are struggling and, you know, and it might sound silly that we own these big yachts and, you know, owners, but, you know, that's something we are taking into consideration before rocking up to these small countries and islands and stuff like that. So it's not an easy thing to change areas.
It's not because there's perception versus reality. Yeah. You know, the reality, whether you look at Italy or Australia, the income that comes in when a super yacht comes in is sizable for any country because of provisioning, because of bunkering, because of all the different things that a super yacht brings in. However, the perception is still going to be the very expensive glossy white boat that's come up with a lot more privilege.
Exactly, and
perhaps that's some of what we need to change is actually it's not just the owner in the shiny boat. Let's have a look at everybody who's involved with it, between the crew, between everyone who helps.
Yeah, and how did they get there? You know, my owner has 39,000 employees. There's mouths to feed. You know, how did they get to where they are? And I did an interview actually recently in Spain, and they were kind of heading that direction about, they were kind of pushing towards, you know, oh, these guys aren't affected. There's no problems here. You know what I mean? What are you guys really worried about? And I just had to say, well, you know, we try and bankrupt these rich guys. There's 40,000 people relying on them. And then probably this flow on from those people. And, you know, I remember there was a big thing against Richard Branson at the time. And it's like, well, hold on a minute. You know, these guys are looking after a lot of people as well. So we do.
And he started, you know, selling records out of a telephone box, you know.
I've worked hard as well. And you might just see the shiny boat. And yeah, I think there's a bit more to it. But also probably the other way as well. You know, it's both sides. But
we'd
love to get you on. Yeah.
I believe there's, you know, a large number of very good people who are very concerned about who they have. I know Dave had a story of the last recession where he was a media magnate and he's like, you know, I employ so many people. I have had to let people go and I don't want them to see me in my super yacht right now because that's just going to be too hard. Because I've had to let so many people go, but I really feel it. You know, I've worked hard to build this up and I had all these people dependent on me and I'm well aware of the livelihoods I've been supporting.
And that's what we've been going through. You know, we're tossing and turning that, but we've been lucky enough, and I'll say this, you know, across the board, the owner has managed to keep everyone employed and he's actually increased about 500 or 600 people. So we are on the lucky side, you know, of the company. But still being aware, you know, we still have to be aware, especially if we're pulling up into these poor island countries like Pacific Island countries haven't only rely on tourism and they've had nothing. You know, they haven't had COVID, but they also haven't got their livelihood. So, yeah, it won't become easy when we go to move, you know, that's for sure. Yeah, but hopefully Europe opens up for us and everything's perfect come June. That's the big finger crossed. We don't want to move away yet.
Yeah, well, here's hoping, as we all are, that if not the first half this year, the latter half this year, we'll see, you know, positive changes. And
maybe we'll get some super yachts around Ireland.
I tell you, we love sailing. tell you that. I'm not sure if you'll make it to where we are in Dublin, but it would be fun. You certainly have the Irish welcome.
We actually looked last year because we were over in the Baltic last year and we looked at doing Ireland, Scotland and into the UK. But what we found was the biggest problem for us was actually getting docks that were anything close to anything. You know what I mean? They were actually going to put us in so far away with container ships and stuff. It just didn't feel right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking of actually would probably be Dunleary or the North Wall where – the ferries come in would be the only place you could actually dock a very big super yacht.
I wanted to go there. You're so happy. You know, let's get there. We're only just across the way, you know, an eye trip and we're back, you know. And
if that's
where do we go? You know, how can we do this? You know, I'd be happy to go dock to dock if you had somewhere nice on the waterfront there or something, but it's not set up for that yet. But you don't know because, you know, the Baltic wasn't really set up and they are actually pushing to build more super yacht stuff. So even if it's just one or two docks, it's not going to be the full fleet over there, but you know, it's a start.
Oh, that would be very fun. I would be located in a super yacht hub instead of just a sailing hub.
It would be great. Yeah.
Well, Nathan, it has been an absolute pleasure. May I say my full congratulations for a very well deserved win. It has been a pleasure hearing the story and hearing the reflection, to be honest, of what I'd want to hear from a captain, you know, that actually the most important people and the most important bit of the job is the people that you're part of your team and you're taking care of. And I think that's a lovely reflection of where our industry needs to be.
Yeah, I think we probably went off course a little bit from the original awards talk, but yeah, no, you're bang on. I think I can't be anywhere without my crew because I can't look good without the crew. And I always say it to the owner, you know, we're together with the owner is the most important, obviously, but he's also only there for two months of the year, you know. The rest of that year, we've got to make this all work, you know, and keep his investment and also keep each other going. And I think, without good crew, you're not going to get good captains. And I wouldn't be here today without these guys. Mm. So I'm very lucky.
Many congratulations and a very well-deserved win. And I think some very sage advice for those who are, you know, looking at the path ahead of how they do it. And if they want to do it, you know, I think you've outlined a lot of the positives of what yachting is all about. And I have to say, I have not certainly sailed the oceans like you have, but I've been part of the industry for the past 3.5 years. And the thing I love most about this industry actually is the connections and collaborations and the relationships you build up, whether you're on board or on shore. You know, this is my first time chatting with you, although you have actually been on Super Yacht Radio at least twice last year.
Yeah, a couple of times already.
So it has certainly been my pleasure to hear the story behind the winner.
Real pleasure with being here with you guys, and you guys do a great job, and hopefully I'll be invited back again during the year.
You will. Anyway, many thanks. We have been chatting with Nathan McFadden, and he was the A-Crew Crew Award winner for Captain. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You are listening to Super Yacht Radio.